living out our internal and in our external. That was weird and clunky.
Yes, we do that.
Fun. Hi, I'm Kate.
And I am Colby.
And this is the Kate and Colby Show.
On today's episode, Kate is going to talk about some lessons of grace found through gardening.
And then we'll talk about our journey to homeschooling and living out our values.
And then in the final segment, we're going to talk about what's making us come alive, where I mention a video game and Kate mentions something far more refined. We call this part of the show Spiritual Nuggets, and the goal is to offer a bite-sized word of encouragement and inspiration to nourish and care for your soul.
So I've been having a season in my life recently when I've needed a lot of grace. And what I mean by that is that I've been in a season in my life when I haven't really been showing up to my own life in the way that I know that I need to. Participating in my own happiness, making sure that I do the work that I need to do to make my life beautiful. I've just kind of been in this season of zoning out and numbing and, you know, like when you know the things you need to do to be happy, experience, fulfillment and just live a more full, wholehearted life. And you know those things, but you just don't do them and you just zone out for a little bit. We all have those seasons and I've just been in one of those lately. Just a season of numbing. And I think that makes sense. You know, our world is kind of cray right now and life is hard. And I've just been in this season of kind of numbing and zoning out. And that means that I've needed a lot of grace. And what I mean by that is this. Nothing has taught me more about grace than my love of gardening. So I've had times where, just like in my life with my seasons, I've had seasons of my gardening where I'm out there every day and I'm just like toiling. I'm doing all the pruning and just the right amount of water, and I transplant things when they're in the wrong spot, and I do all of this tending and toiling and overseeing and really participating in the beauty of the garden, right? And I've had seasons where I've had a gorgeous, flourishing, blossoming garden, and then I've had a season where I just too busy and I couldn't be out there and I didn't tend to it. And I've literally like just left it for a whole year to just do nothing and not taking care of it. And I go out there eventually and just cry because it's madness. It's just, it looks dead. It's dead. It's brown. It sticks. It's shriveled up madness. It's moldy. It's gross. It's just gone. It's dead. So it looks like the garden has just fully died. And what I've learned from the act of gardening is that during those times when I don't participate in the gardening, that the garden actually still lives. So I will go out there eventually and finally decide to start participating in it again. And I will dig through those piles of dead sticks and I will find that deep under the piles of neglected earth, there's a little bit of life in there still, just this tiny little bit of green that exists and means that the whole garden is not dead. There's still some life in there. And so I will be reinvigorated in my gardening and I will go out there and I will tend to it and take care of it. And what I have found in this act of neglecting my garden and then coming back to it is I've found the truth of what grace is. Grace is that when we don't participate for any reason, maybe we are consumed by grief, just have gone mad with the overwhelmed feelings that we get from just existing on this planet. Our world is just insane, literally, and we just zone out and don't participate. When that happens, life still goes on. Like life doesn't need us to participate in it in order for her to reassert herself. Like she just keeps going no matter what. And to me, that is grace. Like, have you ever had a friend say to you, like, it's okay, I know you can't show up, I've got it, I'll cover you. That is what life does for us. Like, it's okay. I know you can't show up to this right now, but I'm still going to be here living. So in my garden, it looks like going out there and pulling out all those dead sticks and finding, oh, she just kept going without me. Like, I didn't participate, but she existed. And yes, it's true that when I didn't participate, there was a certain amount of flourishing that stopped, right? And a certain amount of death that occurred, for sure. Absolutely. But the grace is that the life was still there anyway. There was still some amount of life there. So when I zone out in my actual life, like my soul, spiritual being life, the sun still rises and sets, right? I still find little pieces of joy and laughter, and I still eat and drink and have these beautiful life experiences. Even when I don't participate, there's still life there. It still goes on. And then here's the real catch to grace. Here's what really just kills me about grace is that when I do come back to participating, when I do decide I'm going to pick up the trowel again, the shovel and the hose, and I'm going to get back to this garden and I tear away all the dead pieces, I think to myself, I'm going to get this garden back to how it used to be. I'm going to make this thing gorgeous like it was before. But the truth is, that's not what happens. What happens is I pull away all those dead sticks and I bring my garden back to life, and it becomes more gorgeous than it used to be. It becomes this thing that blossoms and flourishes in a way that it never could have before. The death that occurred there somehow did something to the earth and made it flourish in a way that it never did before. So grace is that there's still life there all the time, even when we don't participate. So we can just check out of life and somehow we still get something from it. So grace just covers us in those periods. And then when we come back to it, the most beautiful thing about grace is that we get something even better out of it than before we checked out. When all that death occurs, a more gorgeous thing happens in our life. So from this period of being really checked out in my life right now, I know that when I decide, okay, I'm ready, I'm going to face this grief that I've been clearly going through, I'm going to pull apart the dead sticks that are lying here in this mess of earth. When I do that for my own life, I know that I'm going to find something more beautiful than what was there before. That's just growth, and grace does that for us. So today, if you're in a period in your life when you're really checked out, just know that, like, notice the grace that's there. Is the sun still rising and setting? Are you still eating? Are you still drinking water? Because some life is still happening. And then when you check back in, know that what you're going to get is even better than what you had before. You don't have to, I think oftentimes what we think about grace is we think that grace is something that waits around for us, right? And once we finally accept it, like, that's what I was always told growing up about grace, is that it's this free gift, but you have to do something to accept it. And the beautiful thing about grace is that actually grace does something for you even when you don't ever show up to it. And it's just extra bounty when you do show up to it. It's bonus points. It makes an even more beautiful life. So accept the grace in your life today and know that it'll be there waiting for you always.
This is the part of the show we call Chaotic Peace, where we explore some of the more chaotic parts of life, from marriage to parenting, relationships, community, and religion. And we share some ideas on how you can find more peace. All right, so one of the things that's big in our life and in our home is homeschool, and we haven't talked about that yet. So let's take a moment to talk about that, kind of our journey to getting there and what held us back and why we do it. So cool. Set us up.
Yeah, for us, the reason why it's important to talk about and why it matters so much to us is because it was about values. We are all about making values-based decisions, but sometimes that's really freaking hard. So we are not here to sell homeschool at all. For us, it's all about to each his own, like, absolutely. And for us, we had a really hard time figuring out what that was for us. Like, you just think you're going to have kids, you're going to send them off to school, and that's that. And you don't realize that all of your values get mixed up in that, and you're like, I don't know, what do we want?
If you even can state your values.
Right. Yeah. We even had our time even figuring out, what we knew our family values, though. And that's what I'm saying, is like, we knew those values, and then we'd send our kids off to school, and we realized there was a disconnect there. And for us, we couldn't quite figure that all out. So let's just kind of move through what that journey looked like. So, but the point is, what I want people to know as we share this journey is that it's not about homeschool or public school or private school or whatever. What it is, it's about being able to name what your values are,
yep.
be clear about those, and then feel entirely empowered to live into those.
Yeah, to line up your external world with your internal
Yes.
Yeah.
Say that one more time.
Yeah, the, the goal is to line up your external world with your internal convictions.
That is everything. That is life. Yeah. And that is everything we are trying to do and help people do. So what happens is we have, so our oldest is turning 13 in a couple weeks. And so he's getting closer and closer to going off to kindergarten, and I'm getting more and more angst, but I think that's normal. Everybody feels anxious when they're about to send their kid to school, right?
Sure.
Like, that's a thing. So I just think it's normal nerves of the end of an era. He won't be home with, he'd always been home with me. I had always been a stay-at-home mom, if you will. I don't know why I'm mocking that. It's what I've been my entire life. But anyway, I'm not the stereotype. He was getting close to going to kindergarten. There's just all this angst, and he went, and it was half day, and it still felt weird and just not quite right. But we went with it. He went the whole year. And then our second son is only a year younger, and so he was going straight in the next year. So he goes to go, and his personality is a little bit different, and it created more angst, like a whole other layer and level of angst when we went to send him to where I came to you and was like, no, I think we should all just homeschool him for now. And I like panicked. And I,
because at least our first son sort of fit the mold of traditional education approach.
Like he's studious and stuff. Is that what you mean?
Yeah. He could sit at a desk and
do work. Like sit still, loves workbooks. Yeah. Read,
and then
all
kid
that.
Number two comes
past
along.
Past tests.
And
all
it's
all
like,
that.
Whoa.
Yeah.
You want me to sit for how long?
And right.
What?
Yeah. That just did not make sense.
Yeah.
So whatever angst I had to begin with, then our second son, I was like, oh,
sort of
no.
magnified that.
Yeah. To where I panicked and said, absolutely not. So we kept them home. But that still didn't work. But we couldn't identify why. Like, we couldn't really name it. So we kept them home all the way till, well, we moved a couple places. I think we moved to Oregon, and then we moved to
and we had different
California.
Variations. Like one kid went homeschool, one other kid did a public school.
Oh, yeah. So then we sent the older one who was more sit still and read books and pass tests. We're being pretty, we're oversimplifying here, but to make a point. We sent him to school and kept the other home. And then it became time for our third son to go. And by that time, we thought, what if we found a school that just really aligned with our values? Because we started to kind of get in touch with the fact that it was a value situation, right?
Yeah.
Like, what were some of the things? I forget.
Yeah, like we wanted our kids to have more hands-on learning experiences, more
art.
Whether it's project-based or just an environment where they could get up and move around as opposed to just sitting in a desk for 7 hours.
Yeah.
A place that was, just kind of more sensory.
Letting kids be kids.
Yeah.
And that
so
kind
we found
of
this
thing.
Great charter school here in San Diego that was like almost brand new, a brand new campus they were opening up, and we just happened to get in on the lottery, and we thought, oh, this school is amazing, brand new facility,
but the school was older, which made me happy because then I knew what they were doing
and they had a great philosophy of education. Kids had great teachers. Like, on paper, we thought this is the solution,
right?
This
we thought
be...
finally our values would line up with school.
Yeah.
Which hadn't been the case.
Yeah.
So we send them and then find that, oh shit, it still doesn't line up. So then we had to really get serious.
And all
about
the while, like the idea of homeschooling was kind of just floating, in the back of our minds.
It seemed like the only other option, but it frustrated us. We had hangups about it.
Yeah.
So let's talk about those hangups, because I think those hangups are what kept us from being able to fully name what our values were and then actually do the thing that you said of matching the internal with the external, right?
Yeah.
That's what kept us. So I'll talk about my hang up first if you
go
want.
For it.
So my hang up was not feeling good enough. I did not feel qualified to teach my kids at home. Like, I won't be able to give them the education that will, and I have so much of my personal story wrapped up in that, right? Like, I always come back to feeling like the not smart enough one in the room, the dumb one in the room, the stupid one in the room. Like, that is always my story that I have to experience and feel in every room I'm in. So I was like taking that and projecting it, classic projection, onto my kids of like, I have to give them this outside education from someone else so that they won't then be me.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't want them to become me, which was exactly your story as well, but just a different story, but you didn't want your kids to be you either. Right.
Yeah.
Or so, you did, or I don't know.
Yeah. So for me, for me, the hang up, because I could sense that you, my partner, my spouse, like, even though you had your hangups, you were still more convinced that homeschool would be a good option for us. Right. You were far more convinced than I was.
I was clear on the values.
Yeah.
I should say that. So that for us, let's just name those really quick. The values were letting our kids learn what, like, from what they're interested in.
Yes. Right, right. Yep.
Not just tests and homework.
Being home with us more, like sending kids off at that age for us to be gone 7-8 hours of the day.
Yeah.
And get like the best part of their day was with someone else.
Yeah. Cause they'd come home and they would just be tired the rest of the day. We wouldn't even get them. Yeah. We'd get tired, worn out.
So we just so value our family time.
Yeah.
So we wanted, you know, that was important to us. Being in a respectful and kind and responsible environment.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so
like being held accountable to that, you mean? Like,
I just
they
mean,
have to live into that, or
I don't know. There are, I hesitate saying this, but there, you know, in schools, you just inevitably you're around other kids that have far different values and come to the table with far different ideas about the world. And you know, if you're listening to this, I can, You can safely assume that we're not kind of the conservative homeschool. We pull our kids out because we don't want them to learn about evolution. So we're not worried about our kids saying, you know, fuck
or
damn
swear
shit.
Words.
Like, that's not, that's not a thing. Like, we don't, whatever. We, Kate and I speak freely at home and we just tell our kids, look, there are some kids that mom and dad use and some that, you know,
some words,
some, you just
said some
words,
some kids,
some words that mom and dad use. And, they're just not for you right now, but that, so it's not about that. It's just, God, if our kids in some of their prime development years are reinforced with these messagings that boys are faster than girls, that boys are stronger than girls.
Well, that's what was happening, like, is our kids were coming home and kind of repeating those things. Like, and we couldn't fast enough, like, combat it. And,
So it was hard. Those matter to us far more than,
We were fine. Yeah. We should be clear. We were fine, like, sending them and then just telling them at home, like, mommy
talking
and daddy don't,
it.
And just talking about it. Like, that's fine. But all of it added up.
Yeah.
Just became this thing.
Yeah.
Was,
yeah. So for me, so reasons. So you were farther down the path of seeing homeschool as a viable option.
Yeah. I had just been able to clearly name the values and I couldn't figure out how to get over the hang up.
Yeah. And for me, like, there was something holding me back. And I for a while I thought, I don't know, is it socialization? Like, I just want our kids to be social. I don't know. And I'm like, that can't be it. Is it like sports and activities? Cause that was important to me growing up. And, you know, I realized I'm not super invested into that, but what it was for me, the thing that was like holding me back from fully saying, yes, okay, I can buy into this idea of homeschool. Was when I realized that for me growing up, school was the place where I found affirmation and worth and value from primarily like teachers and coaches and faculty.
Right.
Like, for me,
that was huge for
that
you.
That was huge for me. Like, that
your
was
story.
When that was, I needed school to feel like I mattered. I needed school to feel like I had worth, like I had value, whether it was whatever, academics, sports, didn't matter.
Right.
It was just, school was where I felt a sense of importance, like I mattered in the world.
Yes.
And when I was able to, you know, through talking with my therapist and through reading certain books, when I was able to get clear about that and realize that that was true for my story, that was true for me growing up, that was true for me, and in sort of what school did for me, then I was able to look at our kids and say, our kids are in no danger of not receiving affirmation and value and worth like for exactly who they are.
They weren't in your same position.
Yeah, they're not. They don't.
You didn't need to put your story on.
Yeah,
them.
They don't need. Yeah. They don't. They get that at home from you and from me and from their siblings and from our. Like they get that. From home. They don't need school to find that, like I did.
Yeah.
And so as soon as I realized that that's why I was holding on to school was because of what it was for me. As soon as I realized that, I'm like, oh well then. Yeah.
Then could you see the, then like, did like a cloud come off of like, okay, there's no longer the fog of that. So then now I see how homeschool fits our family values and whoop,
yeah,
suddenly it's
more.
A match.
Yeah.
And like,
yeah. Yeah. No, it's not just that, I see that they don't need public school.
Right.
It's that, I see how homeschool actually fills that even better.
Yeah.
Fills that bucket even better. So
that
was, as soon as I was able to name that and see that. And I'm like, oh, homeschool makes so much sense because now we can truly live into our values.
Yeah. That's so cool.
Yeah. We've been doing it for the last, year and a half now?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Finally, just freely living into this is what we do. This is who we are. I love that so much. It is such a cool story. So the moral of this story is not go home, you school your kids. The moral of this
story
is...
Unless you need permission for that.
Yeah.
Then please, do it. But yes, you're right.
But that is not the moral of the story at all in any way. The moral of this story is so important though for your thriving in your life, for you to come alive. The moral of this story is that to get in touch with your actual values and how you want to raise your kids, you have got to face your own story, your own demons, because you will project those onto your kids and you will... You will live out these old false stories about yourself with your children, and then you won't actually live out your deeper truth and give your kids a free, clean slate to be who they were meant to be. We would have just constantly kept putting them. I would have constantly kept putting on them the I'm not smart enough story. Mm-hmm. And you would have constantly kept putting on them the you need affirmation at school story.
Yeah.
And we wouldn't have broken any cycles.
Yeah.
And so when we came face to face with our own demons, then we could live, what did you say, with the inside matching the outsides, basically?
Yeah.
And that is coming more alive. That is finding the peace in the chaos.
Yeah. And for the record, you're a brilliant teacher.
Thank you.
Brilliant human. And our boys are so lucky to have you.
Thank you. I'm starting to believe that.
Good. Hey, listeners, Colby here. Kate and I want to do something a little different on our show from time to time, and that is when we take your questions and respond to them. So whatever it is in your life that you might have some areas where you could use a little extra insight or curious about what a progressive Christian might think about a particular thing, we invite you to send in your questions. It could be about Bible, could be about marriage, parenting, relationships, church. Whatever it is, you ask it, we'll respond. So you can head to thekateandcolbyshow.com, click the button in the upper right-hand corner that says Ask a Question, or find us on Facebook at The Kate and Colby Show and send us a message that way. Thanks. We call this part of the show Coming Alive. And every episode, each of us is going to recommend to you a book, a movie, a song, or something that we've consumed recently that is helping to make us come more alive.
What's making you come alive these days, Cole?
So it's not just these days.
Oh, okay.
It's been many a days.
Like all the days?
It's been a lot of days. Okay.
From birth?
This is kind of, there's a little bit of an embarrassment factor to this, but I'll move through it. So just hang with me.
Like, am I going to be embarrassed?
For me? I don't know. You might. But the thing that I, it's a video game.
Oh, I'm embarrassed already.
It's on my iTelephone, and it's called Clash.
I'm also embarrassed that you say iTelephone.
It's catching on. It's called Clash Royale, from the makers of Clash of Clans. So that might mean something to some people. But anyway, it's a game that you assemble your 8-card deck, and then you have 4 cards at a time, and you're playing against another person in real time trying to take down their towers. Whatever. The details of that are not important. That's not why I'm sharing it.
Okay.
The reason why I'm sharing
help us understand.
Is because when you create your account, you have to create a screen name. And when I created my account, the screen name that just sort of instantly came to me was the name Silencer. And you might think,
that's terrifying.
That's weird. That's terrifying. Why did that come to you? Well, good question. So when I was in junior high and high school, I played a lot of computer games, like first-person shooter games.
Yeah, you were told geek. Wait, is it geek, nerd, or dork, geek, nerd?
Which I was awesome, so I don't really know what you're talking about.
Never mind.
But I played a lot of what they call first-person shooter games. So you got, you know, your classic Wolfenstein, and then Doom,
You got
Quake.
That's awful.
And when I played a ton of Quake in high school, and my name... My online profile name was Silencer. And so why do I tell you all this? Because when I downloaded this Clash Royale game and I made my profile and the name Silencer came to me, there was this feeling of comfort that sort of came up for me. This connection to a part of my life where, you know, high school years, there was just a lot of, you know, as for probably any kid, there was a lot of stress and a lot of really hard things that went on during that time in our family system, and being Silencer, entering into sort of these just games that I played, was kind of a way for me to sort of check out a little bit of it. Yeah, it was escape. You know, it wasn't going out and getting into trouble or any sort of tomfoolery.
First person shooter games, that's not tomfoolery.
Well, the argument could be made. For me, it wasn't.
Okay.
All I'm trying to say is when I started, I love this game, Clash Royale. It's a great game. But just coming up with the name for me of tying back to a time in my life when that, like, I don't know, just meant something to me.
Yeah.
There was a sweet connection to there. Because I think I spent a lot of my life distancing myself from, especially my high school self.
Yeah.
You know, I that person is so not me anymore.
Right. Yeah.
This was a connection to that of
a joyful one.
Of a joyful one.
Yeah.
It was a joyful one.
I love that.
And so anyway, I've been playing this game, Clash Royale. If you play games, you really should check it out. It's a ton of fun. I don't know that it's going to nourish your soul.
Well, I love that. I was just going to say, I love that it's just something fun. It's just...
You know what? It is.
There's something good about just doing something childlike.
I am a 3 on the Enneagram, yeah. So for me, like...
You need something fun in your life.
That's important.
Yes, it is.
Because I'm all about production and accomplishment. And so sometimes just checking out and playing a game and channeling my inner high school self, I don't know, it just feels good. So that's what I got.
That's awesome. That brings me to the question. Do you ever like feel bad when you're playing? Like, oh, I shouldn't be playing this. I should be doing something else right now. Like, does your 3-ness come into it?
Absolutely.
Really?
Yeah. Lots of guilt there. Like, I'm wasting time. Mm. I'm totally wasting time. I should go be producing stuff and making stuff. Yeah.
Wild.
Yeah. So
personality is strong.
Anyway. That's so cool. What about you? I see you got a book over there. So what do you have to share with our listeners?
Yeah. It's kind of funny to bounce from first person shooter games, Silencer, to this, but
Everything Belongs.
Everything Belongs. This is a book that I have been loving for probably about a decade now. I think it was published in 1995. I don't remember, but, it's Thich Nhat Hanh. It's Living Buddha, Living Christ. And it's the most, impactful, meaningful spiritual book of any kind for me, or religious book. It really changed my life. I picked it up randomly in a time in my life when I was at that point of like where you've kind of deconstructed and you're like, okay, I know that I don't really buy into that old faith story anymore, but you're like,
but what's left?
What's left? Now? What now? Is there anything? And I was kind of devastated, honestly. I was devastated. And picking this book up was like the best salve to my open gaping wounds ever. I mean, it's just so beautiful. Thich Nhat Hanh is like, it's called Living Buddha, Living Christ, right? And so the name kind of says it. He weaves in these stories and expressions and explanations of Buddhism and Christianity together in ways that are life-changing. One of the things I love about Thich Nhat Hanh is that he often talks about, he says that people like to say that, like, I am a Buddhist or I am a Christian. And he says, no, I practice Buddhism. It's not something I am. It's something I practice. It's something I do. And you know what always comes up for me in that?
What?
Yes. I always think, I wish Christians would practice Christianity. Wouldn't that be cool?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, if mm-hmm. we could have it be something that we do instead of something that we're just like, oh, I am a Christian. Like, we're always so obsessed with the title and I am this, which... There's a whole lot to be said for identity. Like, I get that. But, if Christians could, like, practice Christianity. Oh, yeah, we could do a whole podcast on that.
What if you couldn't call yourself anything? Could you just by your actions show
yes. that you were? Yes. So I love that he has that philosophy that he's like, I just practice Buddhism. And then in that, one of the implications of saying I just practice this thing is that he's so then open to any other faith traditions and what he can get out of them, which, you know, I'm really passionate about yeah. of being like multi-faith. So I just want to read you this quick little excerpt because this is what he says about that. He quotes this other professor. He says, Professor Hans Kung has said, until there is peace between religions, there can be no peace in the world. Which makes so much sense, right? When you look at our world, he says people kill and are killed because they cling too tightly to their own beliefs and ideologies. When we believe that ours is the only faith that contains the truth, violence and suffering will surely be the result. The second precept of the order of interbeing, founded within the Zen Buddhist tradition during the war in Vietnam, is about letting go of views. Do not think the knowledge you presently possess is changeless or absolute truth. Avoid being narrow-minded and bound to present views. Learn and practice non-attachment from views in order to be open to receive others' viewpoints. To me, this is the most essential practice of peace. I just love that.
Yeah.
He talks about somebody saying, making a statement about, we may be hearing from other several faith traditions here today. He's at this conference and someone says that, and the person makes the statement, but we're not going to make fruit salad. And he talks about how he walked up and spoke in the microphone and said, I love fruit salad.
Yeah.
You know, so I just think yeah. that's great. He includes in the that's book awesome. Talking about receiving communion, receiving the Eucharist and what that means to him. He talks so much about the Holy Spirit and being embodied by the Holy Spirit. And he's a Buddhist. Well, he practices yeah, Buddhism. Right. And so I just love that. I love the interfaith and the interbeing. And this book changed my life. And I've read it through. I literally have read it through more times than I could possibly ever count. I reread it constantly. I don't ever stop reading it. I finish and then I restart. Yeah, it's like my daily practice.
I've seen nothing change your life.
Yeah, totally. So I highly recommend it, especially if you're in that place that I was in when I picked it up of what now. It's a great what now book. It can really help you move through that process.
One more
process.
Time, what's it called?
Living Buddha, Living Christ, Thich Nhat Hanh.
And we will put a link to that on the website, thekateandcolbyshow.com, so you can check it out. And I'll also put a link to Clash Royale, should anybody want to try that out.
Nice.
Hey, it's there. All right. Thanks for listening. Hey, thanks for listening to The Kate and Colby Show. To learn more about us or hear past episodes, to send us a question or a comment, just visit thekateandcolbyshow.com. And just make sure to subscribe to the podcast while you're there. That would be super easy. The Kate and Colby Show is recorded and produced here in San Diego by Matthew Blake.